Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, it's cool and dry and sunny. It must be New Orleans. Yes, in October. Sure. And what a thrill it was to get here. But more about that in a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been looking for the earliest Christmas decorations. A lot of you have sent in nominations that occurred in early October or late September. On a related subject, early Christmas music coming to radio in Milwaukee. The switch has been coming earlier every year, according to reports there. And last year, WRIT-FM went all Christmas on Halloween afternoon. So they're reportedly going to do it earlier this year, meaning maybe right now as I speak. From the Buried Lead Department, ladies and gentlemen, a long story from the Washington Post about basically what they thought was the lead was that Al-Qaeda was recruiting more folks from the United States and from Germany to go over there and to go over to Waziristan and get explosives training, which to me, you know, that sounds like a vacation. Anyway, way down near the bottom of the article comes this. The Obama administration has said that Al-Qaeda's command structure and operations wing have become weaker in the past year because many of its leaders have been killed in drone missile attacks. But the Dutch intelligence agency, the Dutch have an intelligence agency. Ooh, there are spies who want our wooden shoes. In its report, the Dutch intelligence agency offers a different assessment. It, the Dutch intelligence agency, putting their finger in the air, says that Al-Qaeda's ability to carry out attacks has generally improved in recent years, largely because it has successfully bolstered its alliances with other terrorist groups. Quote, with the jihadist agenda of those allies becoming more international, the threat to the West and its interests has intensified, the Dutch report found. That's way at the bottom, because, you know, they're recruiting Americans. Ladies and gentlemen, in the Glimmers of Hope department, you want to guess the percentage of American homeowners, borrowers, home mortgage holders, I should say, home mortgage holders in the United States of America right now, right here, right now, who are underwater. That is to say, they owe more than they have as equity or value in their house. Guesses? Hands? Kids in the back? You two chewing gum? One-third. One-third of American home mortgage holders are... This is your brain on the war on drugs. A U.S. military hit list of about 50 suspected drug kingpins is drawing fierce opposition from Afghan officials who say it could undermine their fragile justice system. Oh, baby, is it fragile. And trigger a backlash against foreign troops. The U.S. military and NATO officials have authorized their forces to kill or capture individuals on the list, which was drafted last year as part of NATO's new strategy to combat drug operations that financed the Taliban. Previously, their strategy was to not do that, you see. The list is thought to include people with close ties to the Afghan government. Well, there would be the problem right there, wouldn't you think? And others who have served as intelligence assets for the CIA and the U.S. military. Afghan counter-narcotics officials. This is a big counter. We got counter-terrorism, counter-insurgency, and counter-narcotics. I say get a table. Counter-narcotics officials expressed frustration that U.S. and NATO military leaders have refused to divulge the names on the list. A decision, they said, could undercut joint operations to hunt down the traffickers. Of course, this is General Mohammed Daoud Daoud. And if there's any trouble, he's going to add one more Daoud every day. He's Deputy Interior Minister, praised U.S. and British Special Forces, but he said that he worried that foreign troops would now act on their own to kill suspected drug lords based on secret evidence instead of handing them over for trial. Sounds like he's dithering. Trial? It's wartime, babe. Trials are for peaceniks. Quote, they should respect our law, our constitution, and our legal codes, Daoud said. We have a commitment to arrest these people on our own. Of course, one reason supposedly we're keeping the list secret is if we tell the Afghans, their friends in the government will warn them. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is your brain in the war on drugs. So, if you've been following the origination points of these broadcasts, last week London, this week New Orleans, had to get here somehow from there. Not the easiest itinerary in the world. You got to stop somewhere. You got to serve somebody. So I stopped in Atlanta to see a couple friends for fabulous dinner. And when I get to Atlanta, you know, you go through customs. And let me just say this without flaunting anything, but, you know, funds were passed from me to the good people at Delta Airlines for the flight. So I have a layover and I have some time that I'm filling with this dinner with these fabulous friends in Atlanta. And what am I doing? I'm standing at the baggage carousel watching all the bags go around for about half an hour until it becomes crystal clear that my bag ain't coming round. Nobody told me, nobody said, oh, by the way, sir, because you actually paid funds for your flight, your bag didn't make the, we tossed it off the plane. No, I found that out on my own. At which point I was told, well, you know, your bag will get to your final destination. And I say, well, it'll be too late for me then. I'll be dead. No, sir, your final destination. So finally, now, all right, I'm in a little hurry. You ever been in Atlanta Airport? You have to take a train from your terminal to where you actually want to go that has at least 8 stops on it. But before you can do that, this is the really interesting thing, ladies and gentlemen, to just show you how fine our national security theater is doing these days with, you know, road companies everywhere. I have been on an airplane, an international flight from London. So you know I went through security. I've arrived in Atlanta, gone through immigration and gone through customs, have never left the sterile zone. And to get on the train to nowhere, to get to finally see my friends, I have to go through security again. Everybody in that terminal, the terminal that only serves incoming flights from abroad, where you've had to go through security to get on the plane in the first place. Nobody knows why my bag was thrown off the plane. And today, now, sometime later in the story, the fabulous Pam Halstead has informed me that we're being told, your bag will be delivered in a time frame anywhere from 1 to 9 hours. Well, for that long a wait, I could get cable TV service. You know, last year when Delta was allowed to merge with Northwest, I think all of us who fly hoped that some of the can-do spirit of Delta would infect Northwest. It is clear, ladies and gentlemen, that Delta has been Northwesticated. Hello, welcome to the show.
cake, please.
From the shores of Lake Pontchartrain, I can see the pumps that don't work from here. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, who knew how far the tentacles of Archer Daniels Midland actually spread? You know what we feed honeybees these days? I mean, we. I haven't fed a honeybee in half an hour now. Must be getting hungry. We feed honeybees. I know it sounds stupid, and it is. High fructose corn syrup, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeedly doodly. And so, it turns out, researchers have established the conditions that foster formation of potentially dangerous levels of a toxic substance in the high fructose corn syrup that we feed to honeybees. And by we, I mean they. A study which appears in the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry could also help keep the substance out of soft drinks and dozens of other human foods that contain high fructose corn syrup. The substance hydroxymethylfurfural, it was a furfural, forms mainly from the heating of fructose, which never happens except when you make this stuff. In the new study, they note the ubiquitous usage of the stuff. Some commercial beekeepers also feed it to bees to increase reproduction. That worked out really well. And honey production. When exposed to warm temperatures, high fructose corn syrup can form HMF, hydroxymethylfurfural, and kill honeybees. So much for the encouraging of reproduction. Some researchers believe that this may be a factor in colony collapse disorder, the mysterious disease that's killed at least one-third of the honeybee population in the United States. That's probably the third that was underwater with their mortgages anyway. So, you know, now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
Scientists are preparing plans to store coral in cryogenic vaults so that the world's vanishing coral reefs can be rebuilt once the climate is stabilized. I think that'll be shortly after Afghanistan is stabilized. We're the stabilizers. Come on. Researchers consider there is now little chance that coral reefs, which are built by living creatures and support up to a third, there's that fraction again.
It's a theme in this week's show, isn't it?
A third of the world's marine biodiversity will survive the next 50 years. Researchers say there's little chance that coral reefs will survive the next 50 years. They're threatened by rising sea temperatures and increasing acidification, triggered by rising carbon dioxide levels. Unless something very remarkable happens during December's climate talks, the world's reefs will be reduced to slime-covered rubble by 2050, says Dr. Alex Rogers of the Institute of Zoology in London. Slime-covered rubble would be nice. It would be a tourist attraction, wouldn't it? This scenario will be outlined at a conference in Copenhagen today, organized by the policymaking group Globe International, where delegates will debate plans to help the world adapt to global warming and deal with the threat to reefs. One solution involves techniques developed by U.S. researchers. See, we're on top of it. For preserving coral polyps from which reefs grow in cryogenically cooled containers. They can live right next to Howard Hughes. Rogers said plans had already been developed for a prototype coral ark at London Zoo. It would store coral from the Caribbean, which has some of the worst devastation, to test the idea. I don't know. Slime-covered rubble sounds good to me. The world's policymakers and scientists have made a critical error in how they compute biofuels' contribution to human-generated greenhouse gas emissions, according to the journal Science. The article addresses a wonkish subject, how to measure the environmental impact of energy sources such as ethanol and wood chips, which absorb carbon as they grow but release it back when they're burned. It has broad implication. The method undercounts the global warming contributions of some bioenergy crops, the team of 13 researchers wrote, because it doesn't factor in what sort of land use changes might occur to produce them. We made an honest mistake within the scientific framing of the debate, and we've got to correct it to make it right, says Stephen Hamburg, chief scientist at the Environmental Defense Fund, one of the paper's authors. Which means things are worse than we thought, I guess. Science Daily reports the combined global land and ocean surface temperature was the second warmest September on record, according to NOAA's Climatic Data Center. Based on records going back to 1880, the monthly National Climatic Data Center analysis says the average land surface temperature for September was the second warmest on record behind 2005. Additionally, the global ocean surface temperature was tied for fifth warmest on record. The combined global land and ocean surface temperature was 1.12 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. So, we're getting there. We are getting there. News, it's the award-winning. Have I said that lately? The award-winning News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. But this broadcast abounds in copyrighted features. Case in point.
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, remember that really expensive embassy we built in Iraq back when we cared about Iraq? Back when we pretended we cared about Iraq? You remember that? That was for the good days. That's when we were ignoring Afghanistan because what? I'm here. Anyway, now a report from an inspector general on that sprawling new U.S. embassy in Baghdad. The main builder of it made so many design and construction errors that the State Department should seek to recover $132 million to make necessary repairs, according to the State Department's inspector general. Sounds like the people who built the levees in New Orleans. And the amount would total more than one quarter of the value of the contracts, $470 million, awarded to First Kuwaiti General Trading and Contracting. God, it sounds so reliable. It's First Kuwaiti. Wouldn't you want to do business with them? The firm in charge of building the embassy compound. The State Department's Bureau of Administration, in response to the IG report, said it would begin proceedings to recover the money, but expressed doubt about whether it would be worth the time and effort. Oh, no, getting $132 million back, really, you think? Because I had lunch at the thing. Executives at First Kuwaiti did not respond to a request for comment. The 21-building compound, because really, you can't have an Iraqi embassy with, 15 or 16 buildings. You got to have the 21 to be fully fitted. It was originally budgeted to cost $600 million. Now the price tag grew to $736 million, partly because of new staffing needs and an embassy reorganization. Well, of course. Why wouldn't you? The IG report said building the facility in a war zone in only 34 months was a significant accomplishment, but it confirmed allegations of design deficiencies, shoddy construction, and poor planning. So, a significant accomplishment to badly build a poorly designed building in a war zone.
Yeah.
What color metal does that get? The IG report cited construction deficiencies, incomplete and undocumented design work, and additional maintenance charges attributable to inadequate quality control. The report said because of the design problems, the State Department cannot be assured that the embassy complies with department requirements or building codes. But the Iraqi building codes, I have a feeling, a little flexible. The report said fire protection systems were improperly designed and installed. Fire protection. Increasing the risk that embassy facilities and personnel would not be adequately protected. The Washington Post reported last year on problems with the firefighting systems. Several months after that, the State Department issued certificates of acceptance and completion, meaning A-OK to them. First Kuwaiti also failed to conduct seismic bracing to protect fire lines in case of an earthquake, did not perform any design calculations to support the construction of water treatment and wastewater treatment plants, and did not properly install many exterior walls and concrete surfaces, according to the report. Sounds like they made it nice and vulnerable. The company also installed inadequate electrical wiring, control and distribution systems. Automated systems did not operate key functions and were not properly connected, while plumbing and air conditioning systems violated international plumbing codes and were not consistent with contract requirements. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, a lovely building, and during wartime, you really did a nice thing. Also, the National Park Service announced that it has removed its superintendent at Gettysburg National Military Park and reassigned him to work in a Cultural Resources Office as an assistant to the associate director. That sounds, from a superintendent to the assistant to an associate director, sounds like a demotion. His job duties have not yet been determined. That sounds like a big demotion. John Latchar said his demotion was in response to the public disclosure of internet activity in which he viewed more than 3,400 sexually explicit images over a 2-year period on his government computer, a violation of department policy, and a heck of a lot of image viewing. 3,400 in 2 years. Somebody do the math, please. The misconduct, which Latchar acknowledged in a sworn statement, was found during a year-long investigation by the Interior Department's Inspector General. The assignment came after the results of the Inspector General's forensic analysis of Latcher's computer hard drive, which showed significant inappropriate user activity. The findings of sexually explicit images were omitted from a 24-page public report of the Inspector General's investigation into the man released last month. That investigation was triggered by 17 allegations of misconduct and criminal activity. Although the report found no criminal actions or conflicts of interest. Just all those sexually explicit images on his computer. So he'll be doing something. We don't really know what. Somewhere somewhere in the government. And good luck to him. And ladies and gentlemen, it is time now, I believe. Yes, it is. Checking the old chronometer. It's time now to check in on the Olympic movement. No, not that. This. Now this. The leaders of the publicly funded Olympic Delivery Authority. That's right. The Olympics will be delivered between 1 and 9 hours from now, apparently. They were accused on Wednesday of this week of being the bankers of the Olympics for refusing to curb salaries and bonuses at a time when salaries and bonuses in the rest of the public sector in England are being cut back because of the economic thing. The ODA chairman and chief executive came under fierce personal attack for their Super League pay levels and bonuses during an appearance before the London Assembly. John Armitt defended his own salary of about $400,000 for what he admitted was 3 days' work a week as the chairman of the Olympic Delivery Authority, as well as a decision to award substantial bonuses to other directors on top of already six-figure wages. One received a performance-related payment of about $350,000 for the last year, although he's voluntarily deferred half of that. Said a Conservative Assembly member Brian Coleman, "How on earth in a recession when there are spending cuts across the board in government do you justify not re-examining these salary packages, which are frankly in the league of city bankers?" Meaning Wall Street bankers. But a chairman defended himself and rejected calls to reduce remuneration packages and said there was no comparison between the Olympic Delivery Authority and the Financial District of London. Bonuses paid on the Olympics are relatively low-level bonuses compared to the millions which are being paid to the financial district, which has not done all of the things it set out to achieve. The Olympic Delivery Authority has done all the things it set out to achieve. In these circumstances, I think it is fair that people should be sensibly rewarded. Because it's the Olympics. Controversial plans to hold the 2012 London Olympic horse events in Greenwich Park are in jeopardy after more than two-thirds of local residents said they're against the idea. The park is a heritage site. 90% of the locals added they had not been consulted about the game's organizers' plans. The choice of the historic park, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, has provoked strong opposition both locally and in the equestrian world. Is that a theme park? The plans are to go before the local council next week, next month. Local residents say the park is too small for the planned 23,000-seat show-jumping arena and 4-mile cross-country course, with the risk of serious damage to the heritage landscape. A quarter of the park will be closed for up to 10 months to allow the construction of the facilities and the pruning of some trees. A spokeswoman for the Olympic movement said she was not surprised by the survey results because opponents had spread misinformation about the plans, including the claim that the trees would be cut down. And athletes competing at the London Olympics will have to agree to their rooms being raided at any time by anti-doping officials as a condition of taking part, under new plans being considered by Olympic organizers. It's a movement, ladies and gentlemen, and everybody needs one every day.
Now, uninventative, misrepresentative now. I've got to cut through somehow. I got to slice it up, dice it up, serve it up nice. Will you bust the balls I bring you? Have you got the balls I need? Are you just an old mop ball in a closet down the hall, stuffed inside the pocket of a tweed? Will you be my ballpark buddy? Will you be my ballroom queen? I want to play today. Will you be my ball?
This is LeShow wondering, is it a Delta? That's the trademark of that airline, or a Bermuda Triangle? Hey, ladies and gentlemen, you know about Dick Cheney's speech this week, do you? We'll talk about that that is to say, I and my cell phone that's turned off right now. We'll talk about that in a moment. But it was just part of the barrage. The conservative wing of the conservative thing is ramping up the attacks, fearful that we're not going to spend, 18 more years and 85 gazillion more dollars in Afghanistan while Al-Qaeda is in Somalia and Yemen, recruiting people from Germany. By the way, I erred a couple of weeks ago when I said before Al-Qaeda was in Afghanistan, they were in Somalia. They were, of course, in Sudan, another S country. That's what my brain did. I just confused my S countries. But Newt Gingrich, remember him, Newty? He's got a novel out and everything, recreating some war stuff. Just twittering, like, that's the shock. Ladies and gentlemen, when I started going on Twitter, you can find me there at LeTwits. LeTwits, L-E-T-T-W-I-T-S. But what shocked me when I started doing that was the two people who seemed to Twitter, to seem to write these little brief bursts of messages most frequently, most, dare I say, obsessively, are John Mayer, singer-songwriter, and Newt Gingrich. Newt is twittering up a storm. I don't know how he gets time to write a novel. Well, he co-wrote it.
I'll be back in the room in a minute. I just got a Twitter.
So anyway, he delivered a speech in Fort Worth saying he fears the United States is at risk because it doesn't have an adequate strategy for dealing with the war in Afghanistan or enough money dedicated to national security. We're going to be mired down in this mess until we fix it. All right, then.
It's not going away. At some point down the road, we're going to get hurt very badly because we're spending too much on welfare and too much on domestic things.
What, like the levies for New Orleans, babe? And not enough on national security, he said. It's a very big risk we're running as a country right now. What was it Ike said? I forget. Ike who? And then, of course, we had the spectacle of Dick Cheney speaking this week, saying basically the same thing. The president is dithering because he's hesitating in making a commitment to General Stanley McChrystal's plea for more troops, 40,000 more troops in Afghanistan to, do what the British and the Russians and the Soviets weren't able to do. But we're different because we're American, damn it. Anyway, you might be interested in the location where Dick Cheney made that speech. No, not even the Veterans of Foreign Wars Convention. Uh-uh, that's too risky. No, he did it at an outfit called Center for Security Policy, I think, which was giving him and Scooter Libby awards because, well, I guess because Brad Pitt wasn't available on that particular evening. You know, you show up, you get the award, I think. Anyway, he made a lot of news saying that the Obama administration is libeling the fine people in the CIA by calling enhanced interrogation torture, saying, we're going to be really sorry. We're not using enhanced interrogation anymore. By the way, where was he during the last 2 years of the Bush administration, which had renounced most of those tactics while he was still in office? Whoo, that must have ticked him off. Anyway, as I said, he was present at this thing. I think it's the first time publicly he's been out and about with Scooter Libby. More of that, of course, more on that subject, available from our subterranean department.
Next, intimate tales of America's former underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who was just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney.
Confidential.
I don't remember who uttered this particular platitude first, so I might as well take credit for it. There's no place like home. Oh, I'm not being all sentimental and female about the four walls within which I choose to lay my head for a few wasted hours on any particular night. I'm talking about being back among the people who know that, in a very dangerous world, no armor is as protective as a sword of fear. While Lynn was busying herself measuring the living room, wherever it is we live, for a new set of blackout drapes, I was basking in the warmth of the enlightened folks at the Center for Security Policy. Well, sure, you've never heard of it. Frankly, before they announced they were giving me their Keeper of the Flame Award, I hadn't heard of it either. Oh, I know the people. But the same folks have set up and sat on the boards of so many centers and institutes and foundations. You'd need a supercomputer with a high-level security clearance to keep track of them all. Hell, I didn't exactly need another made-up award, either. But they were giving my dear, dear comrade-in-arms, Scooter Libby, the Service Before Self Award. And if I hadn't shown up, well, who knows what he might have said in his acceptance speech. Wednesday, 5:17 p.m.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing podium mic 1. Testing.
You'll stand at this podium, Mr. Libby.
Yes, great. is there a little light on this thing or something? I have to have some extra light to read my remarks.
I wouldn't worry about that if I were you, Scooter.
Wow, miss, you better take something for that head... Mr. Vice President.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see you come in.
That's how you know it's me. How you doing, Scooter?
Oh, okay.
I'm going to make myself extremely scarce. Excuse me.
I mean, you know, Mr. Vice President, I can't practice law. I can't work for the government.
As if any self-respecting white man would want to.
I'm just saying this award came as a godsend to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm living on the honorarium.
Scooter, I know how hard this has been for you. It hasn't exactly been a, you should pardon the expression, a cakewalk for me either. You know, I had to cut my speaking fee in half just to be here tonight. Mm. How do you think my agent feels right about now?
I'm sure he feels horrible.
Happens to be a she. She's a shark. She's just waiting to get even on the next booking I get. But my point is...
Okay, people, let's try Mr. Cheney's music, please. Darn, that's good. Okay, take a 10.
My point is, Scooter, you're a good man. You've been terribly wronged by people who appear to be on a mission to turn this country into nothing more than France with Velveeta. This award tonight is the start of the turnaround for you.
You think so, Dick?
I know so. My friends in Special Ops are about to put into motion some very bad stuff for the judge in your case. Very unpleasant series of untraceable happenstances.
And that will help me how?
Well, just think of it as a down payment, my friend. Like they say on the Today Show, when they're hustling you out of the chair back into the green room to face the angry liberals waiting to go on and do the food segment. More to come.
Well, that's very nice to know, Dick. It's a thought to warm my family and me on the cold winter nights ahead. Now I should take a look at my remarks here.
Scooter, just a suggestion from a friend. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's going to be enough light up here for you to read these. Why don't you just take a look at this? Much bigger type.
Like to thank my friend and mentor, man for whom the sacrifice of my career was and is an unending honor. No better champion of freedom. Mr. Vice President, you wrote this. I recognize the syntax.
Some folks in my operation had a hand in the composition of the document, but it's what you were going to say anyway, I'm sure. Just crafted with more of an eye towards your continued welfare.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Just in case, it'll be up on the prompter, along with the photo of your wife and kids, people to whom a series of untraceable happenstances should never, ever happen. I'm sure you feel the same way.
Probably even more strongly, Mr. Vice President.
You're a good man, Scooter. See you at the after party. I haven't been at a so-called after party since a little evening we had at the Center for American Freedom to celebrate Ron Brown's plane crash. No, I hadn't heard of that center either. And a partial diary for mid-October 2009. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
Confidential.
They built this whole neighborhood out of wood.
guess I'll still be around when they burn, burn it down. I will be standing around when they burn it down. Here in the Museum of Idiots. Honey, I'm there when you need me. Please believe me. Please believe me. I'll still be right where you left me.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
A Dallas, Texas County courtroom erupted in applause this week as two men wrongly convicted of capital murder 12 years ago were set free. 54-year-old Claude Simmons Jr. and 39-year-old Christopher Scott had been serving life sentences for a 1997 murder. Recently, another man confessed to the crime. A state district judge in Dallas ordered Simmons and Scott released during a Friday court hearing. State District Judge Robert Burns, hey laddie, apologized for the mistakes that were made in the past and asked the two to not be bitter and enjoy the freedom they're about to experience. Don't be bitter now. An unknown blogger picked up on a made-up post on the internet, which was meant as a joke, which claimed that Time Magazine political correspondent Joe Klein had gotten his hands on 10 pages of Barack Obama's college thesis. Rush Limbaugh jumped on it. Supposedly entitled Aristocracy Revisited, the excerpt revealed the president had doubts about the, quote, so-called founders, unquote. Of course, it wasn't true. Limbaugh discovered halfway through his show he'd been had, defend himself by saying, basically, the thesis feels true. But Joe Klein of Time Magazine finally jumped in, called the report nonsense on his blog, and the blogger, the original blogger, Michael Ledeen, who thought the hoax was real, has now apologized. But not Rush! Deadline Anchorage, Alaska. The fire chief of Anchorage says he's been reprimanded for requesting that a fire truck be dispatched to pick up his daughter from school. Mark Hall says he reported the actions to the city manager and was then reprimanded. He says he apologized to the station crew later that night for taking his request as an order. He says he did not want to embarrass the mayor, the city manager, or the people that I work with and for. You see what happens when Sarah Palin leaves? All hell breaks loose up there. Newsweek magazine has apologized for featuring Senator Ben Nelson in its October 12th Indignity Index, in which it chided him for suggesting health care reform wouldn't be legitimate without a Senate supermajority when he had won elections with a smaller margin. A review of the full context of his remark shows that the senator was making a broader point. The magazine published in an editor's note, Newsweek regrets the item. Dateline Chicago, a Texas police chief apologized this week after at least 39 people. Why is this Dateline Chicago? I don't know. A Texas police chief apologized this week after at least 39 people received traffic tickets because they couldn't speak English. I was surprised and stunned that it would happen in the city of Dallas because we're a very, very diverse city, says Dallas Police Chief David Kunkel. I apologize to the Spanish-speaking Hispanic community. He delivered his apology, of course, in English. Dateline London, Daily Mail columnist Jan Moore has apologized to Stephen Gately's family and friends for the timing of her column about the death of the Boyzone singer, Boyzone, a boy band group from the 90s, which had reformed. The column prompted a record 26,000 complaints to the press watchdog agency in Britain, which has such a thing. But she also defended it, saying she did not hold poisonous homophobic views. She said she'd been a victim of an orchestrated campaign, but adults received thousands of supportive emails. She realized that Gately's partner, parents, friends, and family were in mourning and apologized to them. To them, I would like to say sorry if I've caused distress by the insensitive timing of the column published so close to the funeral. Her column the day before Gately's funeral said there were many unanswered questions about his death, which had occurred in sleazy circumstances, I believe in Ibiza. She wrote that the death strikes another blow to the happy ever after myth of civil partnerships. And she's sorry for the timing. You see. Dateline Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Republican activist Ed Napolitano has resigned all his Republican Party positions and apologized to U.S. Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz over an incident at the Southeast Republican Club on October 6th when Napolitano led the club meeting at a gun range with a target featuring the letters DWS next to the silhouette head, DWS for Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So he's apologized, and he's out of the Republican Party thing in Florida for now. But, you know, soon come, these things turn around. He'll be back. The president of the Montana Stock Growers Association apologized to the Montana Governor Brian Schweitzer for a distressed relationship. Ooh, more about that later. The U.S. Mint has sincerely apologized to customers who experienced difficulty and frustrating moments last week when attempting to order the newly released Lincoln Coin and Chronicle set. Take a tip from Delta Airlines, babe. Don't acknowledge anything. The mascot of the Minnesota Gophers mocked a Penn State football player who was praying in the end zone. The scene was caught on video. The university has apologized. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, and Kanye West has apologized for leaking a clip of the new Spike Jonze movie. So that's the Kanye West apology of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Major controversy in the United Kingdom over the Catholic Church coming out and saying, hey, y'all, come in. To the Anglicans, to the conservative Anglicans who are upset because the liberal side of the Anglican Church, the Church of England, has not only approved female priests, but female bishops and homosexual members of the church. The invitation issued by the Catholic Church says that they'll set up separate, what they call ordinariates, for the incoming conservative Anglicans, and their married priests. They don't have to worry about a thing. A former head of the Church of England, the previous Archbishop of Canterbury, has said he's very distressed by this, saying that this could damage relations with the Vatican. They could have done it. Well, apparently one of his complaints was that the Vatican only gave the Church of England 2 weeks' notice. But, you know, sometimes you got to do these things in a hurry. Because can't last forever.
It's fall, and Catholic Sit and Pray has a great deal for you, especially if you're Anglican. Join this week, and your married priest gets in free.
Benedict, what are you doing?
That's Irvin, my theology auditor. Irvin, it's simple. Better deals mean more people can enjoy Catholicism. With Christmas time coming up, what could be better? Mm. Now's the time to bring your whole family into the church while this special offer lasts.
But Benedict, married priest, you're killing me, Benedict.
Relax, Irvin. We've been having special arrangements back since we made the Jews in Spain convert. Anything to get more people to try the world's best known church. You know as well as I do, Irvin. Once they pray, they stay.
But, Benedict, we can't afford to let married priests in. What will the other priests say?
Well, they won't say, hand me the altar boy, Irvin. Mm. I'll tell you that. Folks, especially Anglican folks, this offer won't last forever.
It better not, Benedict.
Get down to your local Sit and Pray parish this weekend before all the pews are filled.
That hasn't happened since VJ Day.
If you're an unhappy Anglican, start getting a good night's sleep under a blanket of comfort from the only church to win the coveted endorsement of L'Osservatore Romano.
Benedict, we own them.
Bring your married priest in for our best offer in years.
You're killing me, Benedict.
See you this weekend. Remember, Catholic Sit and Pray beats any other church's offer, or your next religion is free.
Hide your heart from sight, lock your dreams at night. It could happen to you. Don't count stars or you might stumble. Someone drops a sigh and down you tumble. Keep an eye on spring. Run when church bells ring.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com, kcrw.com. Available on your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available as a free podcast. As a free download to members from Audible.com/LaShow. And available as a free podcast from KCRW.com. And it'd be just like staying in Afghanistan and finishing the job if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. How fabulous were my friends in Atlanta. They arranged to have a Spinal Tap song played on an AM station in Atlanta. Never live till you've heard Spinal Tap on AM. Sounds so good. Sounds like radio. Typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead and to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO, right here in New Orleans, for helping to make today's program possible. The email address for this broadcast, and the playlist of the music heard here on, just part of the panoply of specialness available at harryshearer.com. In video news, the video for Bonus Baby should be out this week at mydamnchannel.com. And check out the video that a fan made of the Rush Limbaugh tune from last week. It's on YouTube, called Right On, Daddy-O. And I'll see you at maybe at the Huffington Post. You never know. And at theatlantic.com, too. Wow. Almost busier than Newt. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Pray for my luggage.